When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two, live right here on this Thursday on the Early Line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. A lot to break down here in this second hour. And DRS, this Thursday is July 24th. Our next Thursday, 1 week from right now, is the final day of July. And it's set to be a busy one. It's trade deadline day in Major League Baseball. And it is also the day of our first football game of the year in the NFL, albeit a preseason contest, but the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio, between the Lions and the Chargers. We'll take a look at the early odds and set the stage for the outlook for both of those teams entering 2025. A lot to break down, DRS, in hour number two.
Yeah, good stuff here. Rising to the occasion, as we like to say, on a Thursday, heading towards this weekend. And next week, it'll be game week in the NFL. You absolutely have to love that. But a lot of details are going to be played out in Major League Baseball over this final week and a half, per se, that you get down to the trade deadline. There's going to be big winners, big losers, and teams that should have made moves that didn't, teams that made moves and improve themselves. So we'll find out sooner than later, hopefully, that some of those big names are on the way to help other franchises.
NDRS, a quiet Thursday, this one in Major League Baseball. Only 5 total games, only 10 total clubs on the field. That's because we had a full Monday slate, Tuesday slate, Wednesday slate to end out the midweek sets yesterday. We told you right before the break, the Tigers are struggling mightily. They have dropped 9 of their last 10, and they were just swept by the Pirates in Pittsburgh. DRS, how about this stat? Pittsburgh did not come in playing their best baseball by any means. They were swept inside PNC Park over the weekend by the Chicago White Sox. Alex Stumpf, of MLB.com, the beat reporter covering the Pirates, shared this out yesterday. Per the Elias Sports Bureau, the Pirates are the first team to sweep the best team in a league, specifically the American League, to sweep the best team in a league, the Tigers, and get swept by the worst team in a league, the White Sox, in back-to-back series since the 1980 Padres. It's been that kind of year, Stump said. So 45 years since a team swept the best team on one side of Major League Baseball and got swept by the worst team in a league in back-to-back sets in 45 seasons.
Yeah, it's incredible. And by the way, does Bailey Falter now have more wins on the season than we see from Paul Skeens? I see him picked up a 7th win. He's actually over 500. Is he the de facto ace of that Pittsburgh Pirates staff giving out that best effort? But it's just, the Pirates are going nowhere. Wins, losses, it doesn't even register. Like, the Pirates are like, man, that's such a good series that we beat the Tigers. You're going nowhere for the rest of the season. The question now is, for the Tigers, can they get up off the carpet and say, most of the time, it's like, hey, dust myself off. We're only 3 games back with this losing streak. You're still well ahead in that Central Division. But the funny part about this is this might have a ripple effect on the rest of Major League Baseball. Yep. There's a lot of teams in that Central Division that are behind Detroit that figured they'd be 15 games back at this point to say, all right, we'll let go Stephen Kwan or Jose Ramirez or Class A or Byron Buxton. But now they have this big losing streak. It's fool's gold, possibly, for those teams. Like, maybe there is a crack here in this Central Division that we can actually win this thing. Let's see what happens over the final 7 days here before the trade deadline.
I think you are specifically referring to the Guardians, who swept the Orioles this week, winning yesterday in the finale 3-2. Stephen Kwan delivering the go-ahead RBI that turned out to be the winner in the home half of the eighth. Four consecutive victories for Cleveland here into their second set post All-Star break. And that lead DRS that for most of June and July was at least double digits, if not bordering on 12, 13 games in the American League East for Detroit, is now down to only eight. The Guardians back, still by eight games, substantial, but back by only eight. Shohei Ohtani, five consecutive games with a home run now for the LA Dodgers, even a drastically short price, plus 142 yesterday, cashes immediately in the opening frame. Shohei's got 37 homers. That's the most in the National League. And the Dodgers, much like the Tigers, desperately needing to stack up some wins, they get one to take the rubber match against the Minnesota Twins at home in walk-off fashion. Freddie Freeman delivering the winners for LA. Two RBI single that scored Mookie Betts and Ohtani in the home half of the ninth.
And by the way, you look at that 4-3 win. Yes, you'll take that. But even more importantly, even if they lost that game, Tyler Glasnow back here off that IL stint, pitching very well. Seven innings pitched, one earned run yesterday, which came on a solo home run, and about 12 strikeouts. And you picked up the victory, and Ohtani is hitting, because we talked about this game yesterday, and it just felt like it's Ohtani and everybody else. Like, the lineup doesn't look all that good. They scored four runs, they pulled a rabbit out of the hat, and they won. But more importantly, Glasnow is back, because if you can get that starting pitching staff intact, that 1-9 eventually is going to hit. We absolutely know that. I thought they would get to Paddock, too. Paddock went six innings pitched, one earned run, lowering his ERA now to under five, which is amazing for all the talent that he has and the expectations that were on his career before he's been stumbling around. But the Dodgers got the win, 60 wins on the season, 43 losses. Glasnow looks healthy. They let him throw over 100 pitches. Things are starting to look up for the Dodgers now for me.
4.5-game lead, DRS. The Padres lost the rubber match yesterday against the Marlins, so they dropped their final two to lose that midweek set. Glasnow has made three starts since returning from injury in late April. First two against the Brewers, really good, but also yesterday even better when the Dodgers needed it at home against the Twins. Yeah. 18 total innings for Glasnow, only two earned runs given up and 23 now total strikeouts. How about a really good performance on the bump yesterday for Justin Verlander? Despite five walks, Justin Verlander picks up his first win of the year in his 17th start of the season for the San Francisco Giants. The Giants win the rubber match in Atlanta in the afternoon, 9-3. They take the midweek set against the Braves.
Yeah, that's an embarrassing performance out of the Braves. Like, you have Strider on the mound, you're a heavy favorite, and Strider gives you five innings pitched, three earned runs, which probably still should be good enough to win because Verlander can't get out of his way. Like, when Verlander's going five innings pitched, one hit, no earned runs, you have issues if you're the Atlanta Braves. Back-to-back days, they got smoked by a reeling Giants team, which technically the Giants team is better. I get that. But the Braves, looking at this season and what has amounted to an absolutely disastrous one, there's a lot of guys signed under contract long-term, which you got really good contracts for, but also at the same time, like, Ozuna's on that team. He's probably going to want to keep Chris Sale as if, oh, next year he's going to be back to normal after his cracked rib this year. A lot of changes might have to be made over the following weeks because this was the team that was supposed to win the NL East. And this team has 44 wins and 57 losses and uninspiring baseball play out of the post-All-Star break where you're supposed to show your ownership and your front office that you want to make a run and help us here, not sell some of those pieces. And it looks like the Braves certainly aren't going to be a buyer at the deadline this year.
Absolutely not. And might they be a seller, DRS? That is a really good question. In fact, as we look at some potential MLB players that could be traded ahead of next Thursday's MLB trade deadline, exactly 1 week from today, Marcell Ozuna is on the list. His contract expires at the end of this season. A ton of Orioles on the list as well. Baltimore, second best price to win the American League pennant in the preseason. Same for Atlanta in the National League, the second best number. The Orioles have been largely disappointing. 44-57, 13 games sub 500, as we shared, swept this week in Cleveland. Ryan O'Hearn and Cedric Mullins, both all-stars for the O's. They might be dealt with DRS. Some names to know. At the dish in Arizona, Eugenio Suarez and Josh Naylor, big bats that more than likely are on the move leaving the desert.
Somebody's going to get some help here, but also this is not a buyer's market. This is going to be a seller's market, which always drives up the price. And what sort of prospect are you going to give away for possibly a rental player? If you think it's going to mean a championship run, then maybe you do that. But it used to be in the past, Ben, where you just had the buyers out here just absolutely pillaging these teams that are looking just to sell. That's not this season. You're going to pay a premium to get that player.
We'll talk more about the MLB trade deadline 1 week away next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Major League Baseball trade deadline exactly 1 week away. Today is Thursday, July 24th. Next Thursday on the final day of the month, trade deadline in the bigs. And DRS, to your point that you shared right before the break, it is not a buyer's market. There are some very notable and outstanding MLB players that could be on the move. But really, as we have seen in the expanded postseason, in teams at least thinking they have a shot, either a few games above or a few games below 500 to go on a run, they might not be selling off assets that they would have just 5-6 years ago. A couple of the big boppers, Eugenio Suarez, Josh Naylor, Ryan O'Hearn, Cedric Mullins, Marcell Ozuna, might they be all on the move? Suarez hasn't hit a home run since Monday. Blasphemy. But he had 5 home runs in a 3-game span. He's got 36, second most in the National League, only behind Shohei Ohtani. He kind of seems to be the top name on the market, at least the top name, DRS, that is actually going to be traded in the next 7 days.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's hitting 252, which you'd like to see that higher. But in today's game, that's a really good batting average for the most part. 36 home runs. Most people at the deadline are looking for bats. And if you're looking for a bat, it's not necessarily, you know what? This guy hits 282 with 2 home runs and 16 RBI, and he tries to get on base. You want that bat. You want that power bat, and particularly at a hot corner position like the third base. So many teams looking for third base that can certainly power. He's one of those guys. Naylor's okay. O'Hearn's okay. Mullins is okay. Ozuna might help out some teams. But you're just looking for that power option, and Eugenio Suarez is the best by far of those options. And possibility of like 3 or 4 weeks ago, like, oh, yeah, you go for a decent price. He's been so on fire. It's almost like Arizona's at the deadline going like, well, we don't just want to give him away now. Like, you're really going to have to come up with a prospect to get this guy. And it'll be fun to see over the next week if he does continue to stay hot and maybe hits, let's just say, 2 more home runs before the trade deadline hits, or even gets to 40 before the deadline hits. Like, man, a guy with 40 bombs as you enter into the month of August is on the trade deadline. Yeah. Like, what is that worth to a team that may be power starved at a certain position like third base?
And DRS, all the teams you see on that list have either been incredibly disappointing, the Orioles and the Braves, who entered the year with the second best prices in their respective leagues to win a pennant, who are both 13 games sub 500, or mildly disappointing, the Arizona Diamondbacks in a competitive division, but had a playoff outlook entering this year. And the D-backs, after the All-Star break, got back to an even 500, but were swept at home this week by the Houston Astros. They entered the week the stakes did, winners of 4 straight. If you're around 500 or even a few games above, you're at least in that expanded wild card race for one of the 3 spots. Now Arizona, 3 games sub 500. Their ace the last few years, Zach Gallen, who has not been good this year, might also be on the move. A 5.58 ERA with a 7-11 record. But DRS, the guys that blanket Gallen there, Sandy Alcantara and Seth Lugo, both on the bump yesterday. It may be not only in their final games for their current clubs, but with an audition of sorts for others around the bigs, were outstanding. The 2022 Cy Young winner in Alcantara that entered yesterday with an ERA above 7, went 7 innings yesterday of shutout baseball, only allowing 4 hits as the Marlins won the rubber match against the San Diego Padres. Seth Lugo, an all-star last year, who has been up and down at times, really good yesterday to record his 7th win of the year in Chicago. 6 innings of work, 2 earned allowed, 6 strikeouts. Lugo now 7-5 with a 2.95, a sub-3 ERA this season.
Yeah, some of those guys will be able to help, like Alcantara getting that great start yesterday, which is hilarious because he's been so bad. It's like, okay, shut him down. Some team's going to want him now. He's back to form. He can win a Cy Young for you if you trade him. Make sure you give me our best prospects here. You take a look at Zach Allen, who's been bad this year as well. 5, but hopefully maybe a change of scenery, if he's on the move, can certainly help out. Lugo's just that veteran guy you're going to get. Number 2, number 3 starter to help you down the stretch. And then we get to like Class A's and Duran, the bullpen arms, which always, there's going to be a lot more bullpen trades than starting pitchers and bats combined, because that's what teams that are in the race always look for, even if you have a solid bullpen. But it's a fun market because, again, it's still sellers. Like, can you imagine if like Alcantara had like a 2.95 ERA right now, the amount of prospects you would get back? But he's still going to come with a lot of prospects back because there's not much out there on the market. Like, hey, we're going to win the World Series. We just got Zach Gallen. Come on now. Maybe 3 years ago, that was a big transaction, but doesn't look like it's going to be this year. So once again, the buyers out there looking for some scraps and still paying a premium, that's a double-edged sword, particularly if it doesn't end in a World Championship. Like, man, we gave up a couple of our prospects. This guy didn't even help us, and he's probably going to walk, let's just say, at the end of the season, or we'll just get rid of him or trade him for pennies on the dollar.
Couple of those arms, DRS, in the American League Central. Our guy, Vinny Pasquantino, on Lugo yesterday, quote, I'd like to see him pitch for us again. I'd really like to see him in a Royals jersey in his next start. We're trying to make that happen. That's up to us. KC, 50-53, despite winning the midweek set inside the friendly confines. They're out of the American League Central race, we believe, 4.5 back of a wild card spot. The Guardians, Manuel Clase, and others like Stephen Kwan, maybe Jose Ramirez, we thought could have been some trade potential, but now they're only 8 back of the Guardians, of the Tigers. They've won 4 in a row. They're only 2.5 out of a wild card spot in the American League. Yoan Duran, the closer for the Minnesota Twins, different story, disappointing year for the Twins this season. But DRS, those will be some of the names to note in the next 7 days if they are on the move. And to your point, even a Royals team, right? 3 games below 500. They still believe that if they get hot and go on a run in the next 2.5 weeks, they're only 4.5 out of a wild card spot, which makes it much more of a seller's market than a couple of teams looking to add that piece to be a bona fide playoff contender.
And also understand what you're getting yourself into, too. Like the Minnesota Twins, what are the expectations on a year-to-year basis? You know, take a look at teams like the Cleveland Guardians in the Central. What are the expectations? Same thing with the Kansas City Royals. Like, we can't give up Class A. Like, in 2 or 3 years, like, we know closers burn out. Like, Mariano Rivera, no, played long time, didn't burn out. But for the most part, like, it's a flash in the pan, 2 to 3 great seasons. No, we're going to hold on to Class A for the Guardians and for what? To not get to the playoffs this year or maybe even next year? Sometimes you just have to turn that page over in those quote-unquote smaller market teams that really aren't so small markets like Cleveland at this point. That's a team I'd like to watch because there's a lot of relievers and also a lot of players on that team that could fetch some pretty good returns if they make that move.
For
but
sure.
Things getting convoluted because Detroit can't win any games.
Also next Thursday, the Hall of Fame game. Let's talk about it next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We are 1 week away from our first football game of the year, albeit a preseason game in the National Football League, and yet it is football. Next Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, under the lights of the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Kenton, Ohio. It's the Hall of Fame game that officially kicks off the 2025 NFL season and preseason action. It's the Chargers and the Lions. Detroit DRS, an ever so slight favorite, minus 120 on the money line. The over under 32.5. We'll break down the game next week to give you any betting handicaps that you need. From a handicapping perspective, it's not the most attractive game. From seeing the stars in the familiar faces for both franchises, quarterbacks Justin Herbert for the Bolts and Jared Goff for the Lions, other superstars in the fold as well, we're not going to see them. We probably won't see a single starter. DRS, this is a time for the young kids, for the reserves, to try to battle for a spot on the 53-man roster. So it might not be the prettiest football game you have ever seen, but it's football, gosh darn it. And that's a beautiful thing in and by itself.
Yep, two teams with some snazzy uniforms that they can wear. We'll like to see the football back. You won't see any superstars in this game. These are the two teams that had the extra preseason game. But also understand it is about like the backups and getting them some time. But the thing I always like about the NFL in the preseason is where the coaches will tell you flat out, we don't put anything, any stock whatsoever into these preseason games. They're basically for the owners to sell an extra couple tickets for TV rights because we actually like practices and the controlled scrimmages with other teams way better and get way more work than in these preseason games. But it is football, and you just see the odds makers go, money line split, minus 120 one side, plus 100 the other, 32.5, have at it. There's no real handicaps unless you're saying, well, this coach and the Ravens really take it seriously and the other ones don't. It's hard enough betting on a sport like a Major League Baseball or the NFL at the start of a game in a regular season. We say, I know the starters that are supposed to be there. I know the weather conditions, and I handicapped this game appropriately. How the hell did I lose this game by, 16 points when I was laying 4 points in this game? It happens. But good luck in preseason where a coach will tell you, Andy Reid, notorious for this. Starter's going to get to a first half tonight. Patrick Mahomes, 6 of 7 on the opening drive for a touchdown. He doesn't play the rest of the night. Wait a second. Mahomes got 8 plays. You told me he's playing the first half. Almost impossible to bet the preseason with analysis as opposed to just feel.
Yeah, and DRS, Andy Reid at least plays his starters. We probably won't see any starters for the Rams in the entirety of the preseason. That is how Sean McVay goes about it. Yes, there are certain handicaps that we know based on a coach's track record and their philosophy that you can maybe have a small edge, but is it discernible even? Is it strong? Probably not around the NFL when it comes to preseason. One thing I look at is like quarterback battles, right? We're going to have that in Cleveland. We will certainly have that in Indianapolis. I think the Saints are going to give Tyler Shuck a lot of run. If you're going to have quarterbacks trying to prove it on the field in live action in preseason games, that could be a distinct advantage. But again, distinct being like, oh, that team's going to win by 14. No, not necessarily the case, and certainly not in the Hall of Fame game. Again, we're not going to see Jared Goff, Jahmyr Gibbs, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Heck, we're not going to see Aiden Hutchinson or Aleem McNeil either. On the other side, we're not going to see Justin Herbert. We're not going to see Ladd McConkey. We're not going to see Khalil Mack or Derwin James. Just not the story of what happens in the Hall of Fame game. We are going to see guys compete for roster spots and the coaches and their staffs going through the game day scenarios and the logistics to kind of get through that rust and get up to speed for a new season. DRS, one of the reasons this game is the Hall of Fame game is because of those that will be enshrined in Canton next weekend, including Antonio Gates of the LA Chargers, a guy that revolutionized the tight end position. Yep. Why might the Lions be the opposition then? Antonio Gates is from Detroit. That's what our producer Joe Friso has let us know. DRS, the Chargers have been in camp with their veterans longer than anybody. They showed up last Wednesday, July 16th. We're starting to see some practice video. I saw you and OK Dubs joking yesterday. Beautiful throw from Justin Herbert into the welcoming arms of Quentin Johnston. And it was dropped to the turf. Yeah. That is one of the things, DRS, as we look at the Bolts schedule for 2025, I don't doubt they can win 10, 11 games or make the postseason, but to get anywhere close to that Super Bowl ticket, I still think the thing holding LA back is the skill position players in that wide receiver room.
No, it certainly is, and that could be an issue where they're looking to play good defense, run the football with a great offensive line, but you still need that deep threat that can get down there. They don't have that. They just don't, and that's going to hurt.
Aware, aware. has Mark Zeno been? He's back next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
For the next 30 minutes to end out this second hour, we are very pleased to welcome on Mark Zeno to this Thursday on the Early Line on SportsGrid. Zen, we missed you, Matt, last week, man. We thought maybe you were at SEC Media Days in Atlanta for the four-day extravaganza. Were you there taking in all the conference has to espouse about the college football playoff, its strength of schedule, the depth in the league? Were you there at the College Football Hall of Fame?
No, I actually was not. I was in Park City, Utah, golfing and checking out why Retzlaff is no longer at BYU practice. So,
know why Jake's not why, there.
Yes. Go right. Tulane. Like Tulane.
I don't know why. Explain it.
So, no, Donnie, I'm not going to explain it after I will stay in LA here.
Yeah, listen, brother. We got you by the reins today. All right, Zeno, you weren't at SEC Media Days, but you are still the mouth in the South. And as we had that conference's Media Days last week, we've got the ACC and the Big Ten going on as we speak. With their final day of three, we're expecting to hear from Bill Belichick in Charlotte in just a little bit, entering his first year at North Carolina. We got to ask you about the SEC championship odds. Of course, one of the big storylines last week in the huge media scrums for the one, the only, Arch Manning. His Texas Longhorns enter the 2025 college football season not only as the favorites to win the SEC, but the national championship favorites as well. And Manning himself, the Heisman Trophy favorite, entering this year as well. But Zeno, only a dime back, the Georgia Bulldogs at plus 280. Under that 5-1 number, the Alabama Crimson Tide. Zeno, if you were sitting in the risk room right now, setting the odds for the SEC championship, who would you tab as the favorite to win the conference in 2025?
I agree with Texas. I mean, when you talk about a standpoint of them being probably the best team with the best quarterback, I think that's fair. But you're also looking at a couple other teams that are flying under the radar. Teams like Texas A&M that return 15 starters. Oklahoma, I think, is very undervalued here in this conference, and I think they're actually going to have a very good year. The real question is here, Ben and Donnie, is how will the middle of the SEC do? I think we're all, no one's going to be surprised about Texas, Georgia, Alabama, and LSU being at the top of the conference. And yes, I think Brian Kelly has something to prove this year. It's probably needs to take a bigger leap ahead than what he's done, given what Garrett Nussmeier is meant to that program. But it's all those middling teams. How does Florida handle their schedule? Again, can Oklahoma exceed expectations? Will Texas A&M take a bump up? I mean, there are so many questions about the middle of this conference. What will Ole Miss look like after last year? You know, does Vanderbilt go away? Can Missouri mount something? South Carolina, can they surprise some people with Lenora Sellers? I mean, you know, I think that there are a lot of questions about the middle of this conference that we won't have answered. What I do know is I think those middle of the conference teams are going to end up picking off some of the top four in very critical spots throughout the year that really are going to upset the apple cart late in November in the SEC.
You take a look at the team like Texas, we're like, oh, just wait. They'll get their comeuppance once they go to the SEC from the Big 12. Fared fairly well last year, and the favorites to win it once again this year at a plus 280 price. They got dropped last year by 3 points to the Georgia Bulldogs in the SEC championship game. But as you talk about those mid-league teams, Mark, and it's always fun to say in the middle of the summer, we haven't seen these guys on the practice field yet. Heard you mention a couple names. If I were to give you like a top two or three players that you're going to watch in the SEC this year that can make a difference between their team being over 500, their team maybe making an SEC championship game, or maybe even a Heisman run. Who are those players for you in the SEC?
Well, again, I think Lenora Sellers really is kind of the first name that pops to my mind just because he really has a ton of potential. I think the ceiling is as high as ever for a guy like him. I mean, I don't know if it wouldn't surprise me. It may surprise a lot of other people if he's sitting there in December in a Heisman conversation because he's got that level of talent. So I think that he's probably one of the first ones. But, you know, again, DJ Lagway is another one at Florida, another year that he can build on in the same system with the same coach. But their schedule is absolute murder. You know, I mean, the Gators are done no favors by their schedule at all this year. And how much will he grow, and how much can he really, you know, take steps forward to help elevate this Florida program? You know, again, and the LSU, the curious case of LSU and Brian Kelly, who I think is an excellent play caller and a great schemer, probably better than he is a recruiter per se. But this is the year really where he has got to elevate LSU. He's got year number two of Garrett Nussmeier, and Nussmeier in some Heisman conversations might be a little bit premature. Just feels like that's more a product of the jersey that he wears and the conference that he plays in than necessarily the talent level that he actually, you know, brings to the football field. But a guy like Brian Kelly can certainly elevate what he can do and make him a certainly a viable product. And then how can we forget about Georgia and what is going on there with, oh, God, not Brock Van. Why does Brock Vandegrift come to my head here? We're not talking about Brock Vandegrift. Gunnar Stockton, Georgia. Thank you.
Gunnar Stockton, yeah.
You ever notice the old Georgia quarterbacks have those quirky kind of like frat bro names? Gunnar. Mm.
Carson.
Carson.
Carson. And Brock. Like pop collar names. Jake. Just names. Oh, yeah.
Eric Desire.
Name sounds like they get into a bar fight when they're not supposed to. But anyway, we digress. What will he be for Georgia? And do you trust Mike Bobo? Because I don't. This is the first time we haven't talked about Georgia in the same way we've always talked about them. I'm sure Kirby Smart will use that as motivation.
Mm. There's a lot of talent, I would say, at the quarterback spot in the SEC, but not much returning talent. Now, DJ Lagway started a ton of games for Florida at the end of the year, and they were a thorn in the entire conference's side. Garrett Nussmeier is that guy that really is the returning quarterback in the same program that has the most experience and pedigree. Nussmeier, one of six quarterbacks nationally last year to throw for 4,000 yards or more, and he is the only guy that returns to college football, but also tied for the tops in the SEC with 12 interceptions. I do want to ask you, Zeno, about Arch Manning. Part of the hype around Texas is the talent everywhere, but of course, a quarterback with a famous last name. We have seen glimpses of Arch, but as he told everybody last week in Atlanta at SEC Media Days, some of this Heisman conversation and number one overall pick in the NFL draft conversation is not deserved just yet. He basically said, I've started two games. Let's slow our roll. But you know that roll is only going to pick up if Texas and Arch are in the conversation October, November, and into early November. What are your realistic expectations for Arch Manning this year in Austin?
Play well enough to help his team win 10 or 11 games and get to the college football playoff. That's what the realistic expectation should be. I think anything beyond that is, you know, sort of gravy on top. It's just an added bonus. I mean, look, it's not going to shock anybody if Arch Manning is sitting there in December in New York City as one of the Heisman finalists. That's not going to shock anybody. But again, this is a Texas team that, you know, has some bumps in the road here. Obviously, Ohio State in week one, they have to go to Florida. They have to go to Georgia. It's not exactly like it's a schedule that, you know, lends for a first-year starter to be very successful. All that said, this is still a good enough team, you know, from top to bottom with the roster for them to be able to get in the college football playoff. Of the three games I mentioned, if they win at least one of those, guess what? They'll finish 10-2, and they'll be in the college football playoff without fail. So I think when it all comes down to it, that's really what this is about, team success as much as it is individual success. And if Arch has this team playing well and winning 10 games, I think the Heisman numbers are going to be there to back that up just based off of the offense that they play and how they move the football.
A lot of talent on that offensive side of the ball, but notably on the defense as well. A young star last year in Colin Simmons, who is back up front. They've got some of the best linebackers in the country like Anthony Hill Jr. And in the back end, a veteran safety in Michael Taffey. There is a lot to like around this Texas team entering 2025. All right, we have some sad breaking news, it seems, right now in the National Football League that we'll discuss on the other side of the break. Justin Fields, the new quarterback of the New York Jets, was just carted off the practice field with an apparent lower leg injury. That's the report coming in the last few minutes. We'll get Zeno's reaction and DRS's as we continue up next on TEL.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Breaking news right now around the National Football League. Practice has begun at training camp, and one of the things you always worry about, significant injuries to significant players. Justin Fields, in his first year in New York, his fifth season in the NFL. The report from ESPN's Adam Schefter. Jets QB Justin Fields was carted to the locker room with an apparent lower leg injury. Of course, that is awful news. What exactly the extent of the injury is, we are not sure. Donnie, you just shared something in the commercial break about further reporting you are seeing that he was carted behind a tree to decrease visibility, of course, as they are treating the injury. What's the latest you got for us?
Yeah, I guess they don't have like the injury tent on the sideline, which always is infuriating because you don't know why they're going into the injury tent at this point. We don't know what actually happened with Justin Fields because it could be a calf injury. He could have twisted his ankle. He could have like bumped his knee into somebody in that lineman and just limped off. So we're playing the devil's advocate. And understand this, you're always going to be so cautious in the preseason and just in training camp and practice. Oh, the cart came out. They just don't want him to walk 300 yards into the facility if he banged up his calf a little bit. So you have to take that with a little bit of a grain of salt. But it's never a good sign, but also like this isn't scrimmage time. He got tackled awkwardly or like we're talking about a quarterback in the first practice of the year. If they move more than 5 feet in either direction, that's a lot of work and a lot of movement here. It would be interesting to see, boy, if you got a knee injury off a non-contact injury day one of camp, that's just a cursed franchise. Then it really is.
Hey, Donnie,
it feels like. Go ahead, Gino.
Yeah.
All right, man. According to Rich Cimini, who's the Jets reporter, he was injured on the first play of the second team period. So, and then they immediately went to special teams and left him there for the cart to come and get him. Now, to DRS's point, we don't know if he's on one of those carts where he wasn't sitting, where he was like laying down or his legs were fully extended because he couldn't walk. That's one thing. If he got to a golf cart and sat down like, you know, you and I do going from the eighth green to the ninth tee box, then that's conversation. We don't know the extent to it, but I'm questioning what kind of cart was he on and how did he get on it?
So that also was reported by Rich Cimini. Justin Fields is carted to the locker room. He's riding shotgun on the cart, not on the back. Now, listen, we are doing a lot of speculation based on these small reports coming from training camp. Cimini said they took the long way to the Jets locker room away from where the media and the reporters are standing at this moment. So it's not as easy to observe. But as we know, just watching sports and football in general, if it is a severe leg or knee injury and you're in an air cast, you're stretched out in the back of one of those long tractor golf carts because it is so difficult. Is that a positive sign? I'm not going to say necessarily. We'll wait for further information to come out. It should be noted, the Jets win total, 5.5. The over has the juice. It is still available on the FanDuel Sportsbook. 5.5 and the juice still on the over at -130. Zeno, let's say there is true injury concern for Justin Fields in year number one in New York, but also year number one for your new head coach, Aaron Glenn. Tyrod Taylor, the veteran on the roster, you made a joke during the commercial break that might not be so much a joke. Could the Jets be calling a certain team where you reside for some quarterback help?
Well, I don't think Tyrod Taylor is a viable starting option for 17 games for any football team in the NFL. He's a backup quarterback on his best day and a spot starter when needed. But beyond that, that's not a long-term solution for the Jets, who immediately I might go bet to get the fewest wins in the NFL if Tyrod Taylor is the starter. That said, yes, there is a quarterback in waiting in Atlanta who has made it known he does want to start, who has made it known that he doesn't want to be in Atlanta to back up Michael Penix. And you know, then it's a question of can you make $40 million work and the cap room work and everything else, and what's the compensation for it? You know, I've said all along, it's foolish for the Falcons to keep him on the roster. I've said all along, I don't care if you look at it as we've already spent the money. That's an asinine philosophy when it comes to business. You have a bad investment, cut bait and get out as soon as you can. Don't double down on a bad investment. And that's what this is right now. Right. So the Falcons should be very very much forward looking to move him and get some sort of cap relief, any size, way, shape, or form that they can get. All that said, again, it really kind of depends. We have to wait to see what the status of Justin Fields' injury is, whether it's just something that'll have him back by week one or first couple of weeks of the season, or unfortunately, if it's, you know, something that keeps him out the entire year, then the Jets have different decisions to make.
Yeah, when I look at this too, because let's just play devil's advocate and say it is a bad injury. There's a reason why the Jets got Justin Fields. Let's go out and make an actual move for a legitimate starting quarterback that has veteran presence. I don't think their MO is to win this year. I think their MO is to set the foundation and say, you know what? Maybe we stole a young quarterback who just didn't work out in Chicago and in Pittsburgh, where we're going to give him the full freight of you're our starter. Let's see what you can do. And if you are a good quarterback, we don't have to hit the draft. Like, I can't see the Jets pivoting, saying, all right, Fields is down. Let's go and get a veteran that can win five or six games. You're better off winning three games this year, setting the foundation and resetting with a brand new quarterback in the top half of the draft. So the way I'm looking at this, nobody ever wants to hear the cart coming out. But the explanations are, yeah, you just jumped on the cart and rode in. That sounds like maybe you banged up a calf or an ankle at this point. If that's a knee injury, you'd know right away from the beat writers. Yeah. You'd know right away from that team. Like, they're doing the ACL injury work right there. He's immobilized, holding his head and has a towel over his head as they drive him in flat on the back of that little John Deere tractor there. I don't think it's going to be a big deal, but it's certainly big news because we're talking football again in practice, and I love it.
Yeah, and I did not have discussing ways to get on a golf cart on today's show rundown. It was plus 670 for us to get into that conversation. Here we are breaking down how you sit in a golf cart on a football field to come off the field after an injury, but nobody does it better than DRS in that sense.
Oh, I love it.
Completely agree. DRS really did break it down beautifully right there. And I think the overarching point as well, 5.5 is the win total for the Jets. We can even feel confident about Aaron Glenn and what he brings into New York and some young talent around the quarterback spot. A couple of young stars that were just paid last week in Garrett Wilson and Sauce Gardner. I'm sure Garrett's a little concerned right now. That was his best bud from Ohio State. And he believes in that quarterback. But it wasn't like, uh-oh, the Super Bowl outlook for the New York Jets just plummeted and cratered because Justin Fields went
Car
down.
Path
you
only
see
up
the
there
significance.
Too, wow. How about that?
How they do it in Florham Park,
path only
brother.
Today, Ben. Yeah, that's it.
That's how they do it. We'll see the extent and the significance of this injury. I am sure we will find out so much more in the next hour that we have at this time. Plenty more with Mark up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the early line on Sports Grid. Of course, the breaking news we just brought you, Justin Fields in the first practice for the New York Jets, carted off the field with an apparent lower leg injury. As we have shared based on the reporting from ESPN's Rich Cimini, who covers the Jets, he is right now was in the front of the golf cart. What that means, we're not entirely sure. Further reporting and information as we get it will be detailed for you here over the remainder of our time on the early line. We're rounding out this second hour, and it does obviously take in some context, you know, because Justin Fields was not one of the top 10 quarterbacks in that now infamous ESPN list that was released last week, and the Jets win total only 5.5. The quarterbacks on the top 10 list have much more pedigree, and of course, the outlook for their clubs this year, much more optimistic and positive. Here is that list: Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Jackson, and the rookie now entering year two, Jaden Daniels, in the top five. Stafford, Herbert, Goff, the Super Bowl winner in Jalen Hurts at number 9, and Baker Mayfield rounding out the top 10. Zeno, controversy sells. So let's start there. Where was your biggest issue with the top 10 quarterback list?
That Josh Allen isn't at the top of it. He's the best quarterback in the league and has been for the last 2 years by a wide margin. I really don't think this is a debate anymore. I don't know why people are still doing this, because we look at Super Bowls and team awards and winning games and team things, and we credit it all to Patrick Mahomes. Sure, okay, I guess if that's what you want to do. But if you're asking me about who plays the position the best, it's Josh Allen. Who does more for his team? It's Josh Allen. The fact is, last year, for the second straight year, Mahomes was outside the top five in touchdowns, in passing yards, and QBR. So I don't understand how you put him as the number one, but that's a whole different conversation. So again, look at the resumes. Everyone has Super Bowls. That's not what the conversation is. It's not a team conversation. It's a quarterback conversation. So I always question the parameters with which these lists are put into and how they are put together. Because that said, how can you put Jaden Daniels at number five after 1 year and then list all pros and Super Bowls as the metrics for what this list is all about? It's wildly inaccurate that Jaden Daniels is a top five quarterback in this league. Not only would I argue that Jalen Hurts is better than him, I'd argue that Baker Mayfield is better than him. Baker Mayfield will be a top five production quarterback in this league again this year. He'll approach 5,000 yards. He'll throw for 40 touchdowns, and his quarterback rating will be well over 100 once again because that offense calls for it. And I say it to everybody. I remind everybody. Dead wrong about Baker Mayfield. Thought he was a complete bust after 2 or 3 years in this league. He's turned it around. He's figured out how to play the position. He's humbled himself. And that is a guy that literally can help you win games and is at playing at a Super Bowl caliber level over the past two seasons. So, again, some of these lists are prison of their moment type stuff, but I certainly understand it.
Yeah, you take a, and again, with Baker Mayfield, it's always interesting where that how it ended in Cleveland. It was like, oh, he just can't play, but sort of gutted out that season with the shoulder injury. If he sits that out, he's probably still the Cleveland quarterback, but found his way to Tampa. They gave him a couple good wide receivers, and he's certainly slinging it. Looking at the top 10 there, Mark, is there anybody that's excluded that outside of the top 10 you feel probably should be in that top 10 list?
Mm. I mean, yeah, I think there's an argument. You know, when you look across the league as far as quarterback play,
maybe a Dak.
Yes, I certainly think he should be part of it. You know, is it too early to give Jordan Love some attention inside the top 10? CJ Stroud took a step back last year. I don't think that's a product necessarily of him. I think what happened is they overachieved in year one, and the rest of that roster is not that great. We found that out last year, which is why they struggled, particularly the offensive line. So I think I would put him in that conversation. Again, Matthew Stafford being there is sort of like a lifetime service award. He's not one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the league right now. He's just not. He plays with Sean McVay, and he's got elite receivers. And that's reasons why fantasy nerds want to put him in that conversation. But he's not one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the league right now.
Mm.
It is really interesting, Zeno, and you said it there. What parameters were used? What accolades were used? What reasoning was used behind these decisions from the execs, the coaches, and the scouts in the NFL? We will never know. For me, I do think accolades in terms of being a quarterback, as we associate wins and losses in championships with one position above all else, do matter. And when that quarterback in Patrick Mahomes has won all four times he's played the other quarterback in Josh Allen, then that does, to me, be a distinguishing factor. But it's part of a great debate. Zeno? Great having you back here on the Early Line, my friend. We look forward to doing it the remainder of the summer throughout all of training camp. Donnie, anything to say or do before we go?